Welcome to Maryland Solutions with Reverend Marilyn, the speaker for the new millennium. Join Marilyn as she talks with guests offering a wide range of talents and information. And now, here's Marilyn.
Welcome to Maryland Solutions. I'm so glad you're here today with me. And joining us in the studio today is the Reverend Dr. Rodney R. Romney from Seattle. And he's the author of Wilderness Spirituality. I want everybody to know that our sponsor, Puyallup Nissan, is continuing their special financing through the month of May. The commercials that you've been hearing last month are going to continue, and you can help celebrate their birthday celebration by going and checking out their large selection of cars on their lot and enjoying the special financing rates that they have for you right in Puyallup. So don't forget, those rates are going to continue. I want everyone to know that our board is working today for call-ins. If you would like to reach us, if you have any questions or comments for Reverend Romney, our Pierce County number is 253-584-1480. That's 253-584-1480. And in King County, it's toll-free. There is no charge, and you don't have to even dial 1. Just pick up the phone and call 253-804-5765. And now I want everyone to be introduced to our special guest today. The Reverend Dr. Rodney R. Romney is a native of Arco, Idaho. Recently retired from the position of senior minister at the First Baptist Church of Seattle, Washington, where he served for more than 20 years. Prior to that, he was senior minister of the Lakeshore Avenue Baptist Church in Oakland, California, where he was there for 20 years too. He graduated from Linfield College in McMinnville, Oregon, with a Bachelor's of Arts degree in 1954 from the American Baptist Seminary of the West in Berkeley, California, with a Master's degree in 1960 and a Doctor of Ministry degree in 1976. He was awarded a Doctor of Divinity degree by Linfield College in 1987, where he was also the baccalaureate speaker. He has been a member of the Board of Trustees of Linfield for the past 10 years, where he currently chairs the Academic Affairs Committee. During his ministry in Seattle, he served as president of the Church Council of Greater Seattle and was an adjunct professor in spirituality at Northwest Theological Union, which later became the Ecumenical Institute of Theological Studies at Seattle University. He has spoken at numerous spiritual retreats in this country and as well as England, Jamaica, Korea, and Japan. He's scheduled to teach a course in the summer that's coming, 2002, for the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley on spiritual formation for pastoral leaders. He's the author of several books, including Journey to Inner Space, that's a great title, Love Without Conditions, and his most recent one we're going to talk about today is Wilderness Spirituality. He and his wife, Beverly, make their home in Seattle, where he divides his time between speaking and writing. Perhaps the most notable facts about Rodney Romney have been his affirmation and inclusion of all people, his honoring of the various pathways by which people seek God, his commitment to peace and nonviolence, and his belief in the oneness of all creation. Well, that's beautiful. We're so glad to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, you have a very impressive record of all the activities you've been involved with, and I thoroughly enjoyed your book.
I thank you for that.
The nice thing I thought about your book was it included not only personal anecdotes with your spiritual wisdom, which they told me I couldn't do with my book, but I appreciated the exercises. They were a nice new perception of how to handle or look at some things that are going on in your life.
Well, that was a suggestion of the editor of the book who thought that perhaps there should be some practical application. So she suggested doing the spiritual exercises and the prayers, etc. So that was added by her suggestion.
Well, the prayers were wonderful.
Thank you.
I thought they were very appropriate. I've been using them, in fact. Thank you. One of the things that I found in your book were your Beatitudes were very fascinating. They're very healing.
Well, thank you. Those were original. I thought of those as I was thinking of the journey through the wilderness of life and an attempt to make that a spiritual journey. What do we need? And we need markers. And so the markers tell us where we're going and where we want to go. So I use the Beatitudes as the formation for the markers to get through a world that is sometimes wonderful and sometimes frightening.
I can understand that. Some of the things that you have in your book were very fascinating, and I'm sure you've heard the song called Love and Marriage, and you can't have one without the other. Can you tell us the differences between religion and spirituality, and can you have one without the other?
Spirituality is a rather new word. It it only evolved about 20 years ago or so, which is really in reference to one's inner life. Religion, of course, has been around a long time. From the Latin word religio, meaning to bind together, it was an effort to bring not only bring a fellowship of people together, but to bring a body or doctrine of belief together. Religion without spirituality is deficient, I feel. Everybody that's religious should be spiritual, but not everyone is, because spirituality has to do with one's inner exploration of a path that is known only to that person doing the exploration. It can't be defined by dogma or by doctrine, nor by tradition. It has to be a free path. Now, can spiritual people be who they are without being religious? Well, some believe they can. It is my feeling that spirituality, however, is enhanced by a religious system, as long as it's not boxed in by it. Therefore, I would say all religious people should be spiritual, and spiritual people should be religious if they can.
Well, what my experience has been that when I moved out of having so much fear in my life, moved more to coming from my heart, that's when the difference has occurred for me.
And that's what happens in the spiritual search, in the inner search. And we have to be free to do that in whatever way works best for us.
Well, I appreciated the support you put into your book about breaking out of some of the dogma and tradition and encouraging more spirituality to go along with what's already been there as far as the foundation.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was very, very validating for me. What is the primary function of religion today?
Well, that's an interesting question. The primary function of religion really should be to bring us into a fellowship with one another in a common sharing of worship and growth and learning. But the primary function of religion seems more to be to control people, it seems, than it is to set people free. Therefore, I think religion needs to redirect its efforts, because there are a lot of people that now consider themselves de-churched, no longer involved in a religious institution because it did not offer them the freedom to explore.
I agree with that wholeheartedly from my experience. What did you mean by mysticism, and are you aware that 12-step programs are supposed to be mysticism? However, they don't necessarily exclaim that in their meetings. I believe that's why they are so successful, however.
I have great respect for the 12-step program, and I think it's probably spiritually inspired.
I believe so.
And that it has given many people freedom and recovery in ways that religious institutions couldn't begin to do. Principally because of its honesty, but also because of allowing freedom. Mysticism is really coming to the heart of love. It's coming to the place where we recognize that we are one with everything, that there are no barriers nor distinctions, that when we get to the place where God is, we are in the place of absolute and pure love. Reaching that step is different for everybody because we don't all necessarily approach it the same way. It can happen through nature. It can happen through under the guidance of a teacher. But basically it happens when we open up our soul as honestly as we can and say to God, here I am. Help me, inspire me, and use me. And when we reach that level of trust and confidence in something that is loving us from on high as well as from within, then we awaken to our own true potential, and we begin to live the life that we came here to live.
That's been my experience. I had to develop enough trust that it was okay to open those doors and see what that soul really meant for me to be. or what I was being so, in my case, suppressed from being able to live the life that that soul was there for me.
And it takes often a lifetime to do that. If we could do it easily and quickly, what would be the point? The soul is here to grow, and so it needs those exercises in order for its own growth to happen.
Well, I found that through the growth is where you gain the wisdom, too.
That's true.
And the understanding I have come across in finding out about human behavior, going through whatever challenges and lessons that have come along because of looking at my soul and trying to grow into what was meant really to be the true me from what was the pretend me, so to speak,
right.
Looking good but dying on the inside. And in doing that, I've learned a lot about human behavior and human nature and understanding of spirituality. I don't know if you would acquire without being on that journey.
I think we need those systems in place. That's where religion could serve us, or any other system that is based on spiritual principle, because it's pretty lonely, and also the journey is not charted. And so if people can be there who will give us some signposts, it's very helpful, almost necessary.
I think it is.
I do too.
Yeah. Are all religions equal?
Well, all religions, I think, are going toward the same goal. In that sense, they're all equal. Not all religions, however, follow the same path. And sometimes they get stuck on a certain path and don't get to the goal. It's like many paths but one goal, many rivers but one well. And we're all going toward that one goal or that one well. But if we get lost along the way, it's because we start to focus on who we are as a religious institution, on our own power, or we get sidetracked from the real goal and direction of the soul.
Well, we're going to stop here, and we're going to have our messages for everyone to hear, but we don't want you to go away. We want to find out more about spirituality with Dr. Romney, and so glad he's here with us. So just stay tuned, and we'll be back shortly. Thank you. Welcome back to Maryland Solutions. We are having a delightful talk today with Dr. Reverend Rodney Romney from Seattle. He's driven down here to be with us, and he's answering our questions. And if you have questions, too, please call Pierce County, 253-584-1480. King County, 253-804-5765. This is the chance to get that question answered that you've been having in the back of your mind and saying, gee, I wish I could find out someone who could help me with this. Or if you just have some comments about spirituality or religion, we'd be glad to share them. I want everyone to know that you too can sponsor this program. Call the radio station at 253-584-1480, Clay. Or if you choose to ensure the show continuing on the air by making a contribution, please call me at 253-845-4907. Or you can email me at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com. And if you want to contribute to the show, we'd be glad to have you offer your suggestions on topics and guests that have not already been on the program. Or maybe we'd like to repeat some things that you heard before. So you have that opportunity to help us out. If you are looking for a speaker, want a seminar, you can reach me at 253-845-4907, and we'll be glad to work out some whatever necessary needs you have. So we are talking now with Dr. Romney, Reverend Romney. We'll call him Rod. Is that okay?
That's fine.
And he was talking to us about one religion versus another. Is there one better religion than another?
Well, that of course, is totally dependent on the person. Some persons find a preference in one religion. Religion is often cultural, more than it is a matter of what we choose. We grow up within a religious culture, I think, and sometimes we break out of that, or sometimes we continue to accept it as our own. One being better than another, that's purely a question that it has to be answered individually. It works better for me to perhaps be a Christian. But that doesn't mean that everybody has to be Christian.
Well, one of the things I guess I've been looking for when I've been evaluating different churches in the last several years, breaking free of the one I was raised in, was finding out, I can tell oftentimes if they're coming from a love base or a fear base. And that's what I look for, because I think that the love base is more of the spirituality we're talking about.
And that's what you should look for, because every religion should offer what I call grace rather than guilt. Most of us have guilt without anybody putting it on us.
Isn't that true?
We've grown up with it. But we haven't had a lot of grace. Fortunately, I did, I think, in my life, but some people don't. And if the religion cannot offer that grace, which is really total, free, unmerited love, then I think that religion is deficient.
Well, what roles do those denominations play in Christianity, do you believe?
In a way, denominations are in the way, because they prevent us, I think, from finding the free path that we all want. But they're somewhat inevitable, because we are all free thinkers and think differently and have had different life experiences. We are drawn to the denomination that somehow fits our own need better. I do wish that they would find ways to come together rather than to split apart, but that doesn't seem to be what's happening.
Well, I'd like to see that, too. I think we'd be all better off for it and celebrate the diversity.
Right.
Exactly. How do you respond to the Hindu notion of universal salvation? Do you believe everyone is saved?
I have believed that intuitively all of my life. At the age of 15, when I joined the Christian church, I was told that's not true, that only those persons who are saved who believe in Jesus Christ and accept what Jesus has done. So I struggled with that for the next 15 years of my life, trying to accept it, but it was going against some fundamental truth inside of me. I looked around at my family, none of whom were religious, and could not be, except for my grandmother, and could not believe that everybody there would be condemned simply because they hadn't lined up with the right religious system, because many of them were good, loving, kind-hearted people. So at the age of 30, I struggled with that as long as I wanted to and decided I was going to embrace universal salvation, whether it went against my congregation or not.
Very brave.
Well, it was almost funny when I finally had the courage to tell them about it, saying that I thought hell was more a place where we are in now sometimes rather than where we're going, and that we're all sharing in an eternal life. Two women were having a conversation at the door after church, and one said, "Did I hear him say that he doesn't believe in hell? He must have lost his mind." And the other woman said, "No, I think he just lost his hell."
I love it!
But the response of the first woman then was, "Well, he'll find it again as soon as I'm through with him." And I think that verifies what I say. We give hell to each other very often. And sometimes we're in a hell not of our own making or choosing, but it's just there in our environment. It is a state of being, I think. It's not an eternal place of destiny.
I agree with that. I've never heard it worded that way, but that's wonderful.
I just do believe that every soul is here to learn its lessons, and it will go back to God, to the home we never really left, but sometimes think we have.
I am finding out that the more I search inside and displace those lack of honesty or the negative attitudes or predicaments and see them from a more loving point of view, that I feel more heaven on earth.
That's how it comes.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that's one of the things I'm finding, is that we can create heaven on earth in our own lives.
And I think we're doing it all the time. You know, it's an easy thing to do. We're doing one or the other, because we're not here as inanimate objects. We're always creating, and it's up to us what we create.
Exactly. I like that part today, because I can be responsible for it. I don't have to be what somebody else chooses me to be.
That's right.
Yeah, and that was the difference in my old church and where I am today.
And it took you a long time to find that, I'm sure.
It did.
But the search was also part of the blessing.
And, you know, there was a lot of good parts that went with the dogma that I was raised with. Very ritualistic, very rule. Lots of rules.
Right.
But there was a certain foundation I got from, in my case, there was a confirmation, and you had to read Luther's Small Catechism and memorize that and so forth. And there was some real wisdom in that, even though the church was not maybe as liberal as might have been loving in my case, that I was needed at the time. But I, those foundational things have come back to me and been there for me, even though it wasn't something I followed through forever.
I agree. And, you know, I'm not anti-ritual. I think there's great strength in ritual and in old ceremonies and old prayers that have lasted through the years. What I am against is standardizing those and saying that's the only thing you can do. Whenever I go through ritual now in churches that do that, I bring my own interpretation to the ritual so that it becomes meaningful for me. And it's an honoring of a historical path for me, as well as being freed up for the path that I'm on now.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I did perform a marriage ceremony recently, and I put together the ceremony myself out of inspiration and a little research. And I received lots of compliments. And I thought it was probably not the typical what you would expect for a wedding, but it touched the hearts of a lot of people
right
there. And that's what I thought was significant.
And that's what it should do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who is Jesus and how relevant is he for this age?
Well, I'll speak here from a personal point of view. Jesus is for me the major teacher in my life. I revere his life, honor it. I wish we knew more about him. That which we know about him was written down some years after he lived. And, of course, we cannot be absolutely certain that all the words that appear in the Gospels were actually words that he spoke.
I agree.
But we do know, I think, that this was a God-realized man who knew that his destiny and his life on this earth was to help point the way to a loving God. And I think he, in a sense, he was called the Christ, which means the anointed one. And in a sense, that anointment belongs to every religious teacher, so that we all become the Christ if we find the same principles that he did in our lives and live them out. It was a very simple message that he gave. Love one another. Treat others as you want to be treated, because what you give out is what you get back. And, of course, he was in disfavor with the religious institution of his time because he took that approach. So he's very relevant to me, and I would like to see him become more relevant to all time and places if we could just get him freed from fundamentalist religion.
That was the thing I was just thinking as you were talking, is that I belong to the Association for Research and Enlightenment, VRE, and they say Jesus is the pattern.
Right.
And what a wonderful pattern to follow.
That's true.
And it's not necessarily one church's pattern. It's a pattern for all of us.
That's right. And I think Jesus really was universal. I think he was universal in his love, in his teaching, and in the direction that he offered. I don't think he was ever trying to create a system that would shut people out or that would leave people deficient.
And you mentioned heresy. Aren't most pioneers considered heretics?
The American Medical Association has a slogan that heresy is the price of progress. As we look back in history, the religious thinkers that were branded heretics are now being studied today as having something to offer us, such as the Gnostics. We are discovering that that religion has been far too quick to close the door on exploring and thinking freely, and therefore branding people as heretics didn't really stop them. It just offered them another dimension of truth.
And that's where acceptance in whatever's going on can really lead us to more information. Please remember our phone number, 253-584-1480 for your questions in Pierce County, 253-804-5765 if you're calling from King County. Stay tuned, and we'll be back shortly after these messages. Don't go away. You'll find out some more answers you've been wanting to ask, but we're afraid to, so stay tuned. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Maryland Solutions. We're so glad you're with us today and that you're here to hear Reverend Rodney Romney with us and his talking about his book, Wilderness Spirituality. Rod, where can they find your book?
Well, unfortunately, the second printing is not yet released, which is coming out soon. There are a few copies around yet in hardback, and if they have difficulty, get in touch with me and I can supply them.
How would they get in touch with you?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe through you.
Oh, that'd be fine.
Okay.
All right. Sure. You can contact me at 253-845-4907 or email me at marilyn@angelicasgifts.com. Also, if you are contacting me, I'm available for counseling, classes, readings, past life regression, and talking to those that have passed over. So I'm available for speaking and seminars also. And we're just wanting everyone to know that they can also sponsor this program. If they want to call the radio station, KLAY 253-584-1480. Rod, how did the events of September 11th, 2001, what did they teach us about religion?
I think they taught us dramatically about the dangers of religion, the dangers of fundamentalism that is so desirous of seeing its own way propagated that it's willing to do anything, even to destroying, in order to make that happen. Fundamentalism is, in a sense, a perversion of religion because it takes out the love element, and it's so intent on dogma and doctrine that it can eradicate people, as they did in the terrorist attack. We have forms of that in our own country under Christianity, where very militant people have sponsored racism, have excluded homosexual people. There's a whole list of bad things that have happened under the guise of religion that have been tragic. 9/11, the events of 9/11, however, also opened the door, I think, to a wonderful new opportunity, an opportunity to become one people again, rather than people at war with each other, an opportunity to realize that peace is not just a luxury, peace is a necessity, and we must search it and seek it with all our being. Unfortunately, that's not the direction our government has gone. But I think there are signs now of a mass uprising among people in this country that are calling for more peaceful solutions than what we have currently been undertaking, because our responses have, in a sense, been also terroristic. Innocent lives have been lost through our bombing, and war never brings peace. War may for a time halt the aggression, but there is no lasting peace that has ever been produced by war.
Exactly.
So I hope we have learned that. We now know that we could probably destroy the planet if we wanted to. So why fool around with those weapons any longer? If we no longer honor this life for ourselves, then we might as well not be here.
Well, a lot of people have seen the 9/11 as a wake-up call.
I think it truly was, yeah. It also has shown us, I think, we must all come together in love, or we will all perish in fear.
I agree with that. In fact, one of the articles I gave you that I've written today told about how I discovered praying for the other person brought about the lack of attack. I was being pursued in a battered and abusive relationship one particular night, and for some reason, it was like time stood still. And I thought, what is going on here? Because the pursuer, my ex-husband, was very, very much in a rage. And I was very scared because this wasn't the first time. And so this voice said, Marilyn, what was the sermon last Sunday? And I thought in my head, it's each Sunday is the words of Jesus on the cross. God forgive him, for he knows not what he does. And I prayed that. And then I said, God bless him. And the room still was perfectly at still. And I thought, well, now what do I do? And I prayed it again. And the voice said, now you can leave. I left, walking right by him, which was too close for comfort as far as I was concerned, and went to one part of the house, and he proceeded later out the door, went to the other end of the house, and there was no problem the rest of the evening. And I found out when you pray for those others, they can't attack. There's nothing to attack because you've sent out love.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, after the attack that happened on September 11th, in my questing of what can I do, it came to me very strongly that the thing I need to do each day is to pray for Osama bin Laden. And, of course, I didn't want to.
I know what you're saying.
Because this is a person, you know, that your instant reaction is that he's evil. Although, personally, I don't believe anybody's evil. I think people are lost. I don't think that they're evil. But in my discipline, then, of accepting that assignment and praying every day for him, perhaps, and trying to encourage others to do the same, perhaps we did change his direction. And certainly, he's not been apparent in his actions any longer. Where he is, no one knows. But it's, you know, Jesus said, pray for your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you.
Yes.
Because there can be a great difference brought about in their lives as well as in the life of the one praying. And in a sense, as you learned with your husband, it diffuses the rage. It puts a new kind of energy into a situation. What if instead of rushing to bomb Afghanistan, we had simply turned the other cheek and said, we're sorry this happened. We want to find ways to make it better. Maybe everything would have ended and we would have had the beginnings of a peaceful solution.
Well, I have done the same as you and prayed for the man. And I had learned through my experiences prior that you don't necessarily want to pray for the person.
That's true.
But it's in my best interest, and it's in the best interest of the situation to do it. And the results are exactly more of the results that I would like to experience than if I didn't do it.
Correct.
So it's really, I'm better off doing it and not to make it. So many people will say, oh, this is hard. And I'll say, no, you just do it. Take the word hard away.
Right. Well, and if it were easy, it wouldn't have a whole lot of meaning, would it?
No.
Because it is hard, it's that much more important.
I think that's true, too. Mm-hmm. And it shows that you're on the right path.
Right.
You know, because there's not going to be lily whites all the way down the path flowing in your way as you proceed, necessarily. Are some people more predisposed towards spiritual awareness and more capable of attaining mystical enlightenment and spiritual wisdom than others?
We all have the same capacity, I think, to know God and to love God. But there's no doubt in my mind that some people come here more spiritually advanced than others. Some have arrived here with the role of teacher clearly held out to them. Others come as students. We must be very gentle with each other because whatever our role is, we're all here for just one purpose, and that is to love and care for one another. But some, yes, are more predisposed, I think, to spiritual understanding and the spiritual life. The contemplative life, for example, is much more pleasant to certain people than the activist life. But we need both. We need people in this world who will be social activists, and we need people who will be prayerful contemplatives, and that somehow they bring their energies together. And that the contemplative can learn to be an activist, and the activist can learn to be a contemplative, even though it may not be part of our deepest nature.
And you come into balance then.
We come into balance, and then we create the world here that's safe for everybody, where everyone can grow and learn what they came here to learn.
And what I'm also seeing is if you are active in those, like you have some certain causes that you've been very
right.
outspoken about. And I think that instead of holding back, but to do that is part of who we are soul-wise, that we're supposed to express those things and not hold back.
And if we accept oneness as a calling, that we're, and the mystic has to do this, I think, then we have to work to be sure that we are not closing out on anyone. Even the one that's labeled as the evildoer, we still have to find oneness with that person.
And one of the things, I guess, is the huge lesson I've learned is that I can love them as a child of God, even if they're
right.
not my best friend.
And somehow be able to see into the soul of the person, that part of that person that is pure, that is divine, that is loving, but maybe has been so damaged or covered up through a whole clutter of things that the soul has not been free to express. In counseling with people, particularly people who are maybe on the edge of being dangerous or a little bit deranged, I always pray in meeting with that person, help me to see the soul of the person here, that I might honor the truth that is in this person.
It took until, excuse me, It took until about a year before my mother died for me to be able to see past her paranoid schizophrenia and see her through her soul. And what a blessing that was.
Yes.
That was just an awesome experience to go past all the garbage, I guess you'd say, and see that here's this beautiful person. But it wasn't necessarily acted out like I would have preferred.
Right.
But she really was doing the best she could.
My mother's in a rest home now. She's 94 and sometimes knows me and sometimes doesn't. But always my prayer when I go to see her is, help me to see her soul. Because the soul of this woman is there. It may not be able to express itself adequately through her mental functions any longer, but it's still there and can be touched, I believe.
I agree. You know, one of the things I've come, you talked about the contemplative life, and I do a lot of meditating. And at one point, for about 2 years, that's all I did because of poor health. I said, what am I supposed to be doing just laying here breathing? And God said, you're going to learn how to meditate. And I found out through that I had a lot of psychic abilities that had been very latent and suppressed, not accepted by my church. In fact, they preached against a lot of these things that I'm now doing today. And I'm finding out that the more we get in touch, though, with that connection to a higher power or God, I think those powers just start to manifest.
I do, too. And I think some people are gifted with certain psychic perceptions that others don't have. I've always been told within myself not to try to get somebody else's gift and use it for me, because a lot of psychics pretend to do that, I think. But I've also known people who were genuinely perceptive in psychic realms, and I think came with that gift and have been using it lovingly and carefully. We all have a bit of it. We'll all have enough of it so that we don't need to be afraid of it and that we shouldn't misuse it.
Well, I thought it was fascinating reading your book when you talked about the car was there with entities in it. And I attended a class when I took my past life regression training, and the room was full of entities, and that was the first time I had experienced that fullness of. It looked to most people probably empty-ish, you know, but it wasn't.
You know, the truth is, we are never alone.
Right.
We may walk down a path and think we're the only one on that path, but we've got companions, and they're loving companions and have been with us all through this. So. We have a lot of support given to us. We don't need to try to get in touch with it necessarily, but I think it takes away the loneliness that we all feel at times if we recognize we are not alone and never have been.
That was a very healing thing for me to understand, that I really needed to hear that message, and I hope you people did too. We are going to be returning in just a minute, but stay tuned for these messages. And any questions that you might have, feel free to call 253-584-1480 in Pierce County, King County, 253-804-5765. Be back with you in just a minute. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're so glad you stayed around. You're going to hear some interesting information now. Be sure and call the station if you wish to sponsor the program and keep us on the air, KLAY 253-584-1480. And if you're wishing to reach me for counseling, other services, past life regression readings, or talking to those passed over, call me at 253-845-4907. I have a really interesting question for Rod today. And in his book, he talked about abortion. And I know that he had some interesting comments to say about that. And I'd like him to share what he had in the book, and then I have some other information I'd like to add to that.
I'm not sure I remember exactly what I wrote, but I believe that abortion is a choice that we make. And I remember that what the scriptures teach about the point at which we become a soul in that wonderful parable of creation that comes in the book of Genesis. We are told that when God breathed the breath of life into Adam, it was at that point at which Adam became a living soul. and that was his awakening upon this earth as an entity. Therefore, it would seem to me, if there is wisdom in some of this, that the soul does not enter the body necessarily until at the time of birth. However, since we can't prove that, I would opt for this, that there may be situations and times where it's inappropriate for a soul to enter into a situation or a family life. And therefore, if with spiritual counsel and prayerful support, those persons involved could reach that decision and offer that entity that's seeking to enter, to come into this world, an opportunity at another place or another time, that might be to the greater wisdom. We should not necessarily think that we have to have children that have been born out of some error or mistake that we made, because I don't think that's right to us nor to the child.
Well, I thought that was a really wonderful way to explain this. One of the comments you made is we're possibly just not, we're killing the organism that would be a housing for the soul.
That's what I think, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And in doing that, what I have learned on my own training and my background from helping others with past life regression is that we can connect with the soul of the child before the birth, and we can negotiate if it isn't an appropriate time for whatever reason. I know in counseling one woman, I normally at that time still was not really in favor of abortion. I couldn't do it myself. But in her case, and I can't remember the real details, but it seemed an extremely appropriate thing, and it was the only time I've ever had that come up, but it was like one in a million maybe. But I do know from my experience at this point is that the soul can agree to either find another family or come in at a later time when it's a bit more opportune, and a spontaneous abortion can occur. Now,
right.
Isn't that more humane than going through the aspects of how we deal with
truly,
it today?
Truly, yes. And then that allows the spiritual aspect of the situation to be expressed rather than just the physical or the moral aspect that we often put upon the whole procedure.
Yeah, there's so much of your book that I recommend to people. If you really do want a copy and you can't find one, do contact me. His book is wonderful. It's as if I would have written it myself, except
Thank
I didn't
you.
Have his life to put in for the anecdotes. He has great anecdotes. And he's also from Idaho, where my daughter's living in Boise. So that has another heart connection to me. One of the things that you did in your book is, I don't know if you've made up this word or if it really is a word, but neo-fundamentalism, I thought was a fantastic. I read that word and I read it again and I thought, that, I never heard it before. Is that new to you?
Well, it's the new fundamentalism of our time, I think. There's always been a fundamentalist mindset around in the world. We can even find traces of it back in the Bible. But neo-fundamentalism is what's happening right now in this period of time. And it's where you take a certain principle or doctrine or dogma or belief and sort of make that the ironclad rule that nobody can break. And that neo-fundamentalism has been responsible for more damage and heartache and problems in society than we're almost willing to admit.
Yeah, I agree with that. You also mentioned that religious nationalism is a kind of idolatry. Do you want to explain that?
Well, we've certainly seen a demonstration of that in recent months as people have turned the American flag into a religious symbol and have sung God Bless America as though it were the tribute being paid to God. I think the day has to come when nationalism is going to become a heresy, because the goal for the world is to become one. We need oneness more than ever now, and we've got to stop some of our nationalistic policies and our adoration of our history and reach out to the fact that we're meant to be one world, and that it's not God blessing America that's needed. It's God blessing the world.
Oh, that's true. And, you know, the thing is, too, is that when we place God first, the rest falls in place.
Yes.
And so the national aspect, I have a friend that really gets upset. He said they shouldn't be doing that. They should be coming together, focusing on the godness of this situation.
Very true. Right.
And gets upset with the nationalism part.
The flag and the anthem and so on can be very polarizing. And I think that is not what we need at this point. We need something that's healing and that's uniting.
I think that's terrific. One of the things I thought was really interesting in your book, and you talked about the blind man, and people were saying, was he blind because his parents' sin or his own sin? And it said in the Bible that it was neither. It was so that God's power might be found in his healing, and that was John 9:3. And does that mean, in your opinion, that our illnesses, diseases, and medical conditions could be cured through God's power?
They often are. And I think that's always the possibility that can happen. There are times, I think, when we need to rely on medical science, when perhaps we don't have the faith that will allow us to try an alternative way. But in my own life, I have known healings, both within me personally and with people that I've worked with, that have been purely from the Spirit, with no medical assistance that was visible. I'm for both. I'm for honoring medical science when we need it, but I'm also for looking at more holistic opportunities and for tapping into the spiritual. I don't rule out one over the other, but I do believe that spiritual healing is always a reality if we truly seek it.
I agree with that. I talk about the complementary of the two
right
medias, or mm-hmm. bringing them together to support each other.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And in my case, there was a certain time when my doctor said, don't get off your antidepressants too soon or you may be on them the rest of your life. And at one point it finally became obvious I could remove myself from that medication, and I have been off my antidepressants for over a year and a half now, and I had a long lifetime history, hereditary history. And I really truly believe that the more spirituality that came into my life, the healthier I became.
I agree with that. And you know also what happens to us is in that process we're freed from our inordinate fear of death. Because as long as we are fearing death, we are denying it. And there comes a point in the lives of all of us when that is our assignment, to let go and move on to the new adventure and the next life. So it's out there not as a threat, but as a door, mm-hmm. and it will open in its own time if we will allow the process to take place.
Right. What do you see the role of religion and spirituality and how they play in our future today of human consciousness, and what do you see for the road ahead?
I think we're in one of the most exciting ages that humankind has ever lived through. I think we're going to experience something that is a new word for me. I got it from Wayne Teasdale, who is an author and a friend of mine, interspirituality. I think religions are going to find themselves through the spiritual path in a new place of relationship. And I believe the world is going to come out of this recent attack with a new sense of unity and purpose. We are on the cusp. I think we're on the edge of a tremendous breakthrough. And it's going to happen.
Do you see this as the forerunner for the thousand years of peace?
Well, that's a metaphor, but I certainly do see it as the forerunner for an era of peace. And if we can experience that personally, as I think many of us do, why could we not experience it together as a human family?
What a wonderful thought.
And we always must have that to work toward, I think. If it's there as the goal, then finding, walking the path to that goal is part of the joy.
Exactly. And keeping your perspective while you're doing the walking, because sometimes it's a little painful.
It is a little painful.
I had that this evening, last night. I want my listeners to know, if you tuned in to hear Dr. Cherie Moore today, she couldn't be with us because of a court situation, and asked that she be on next week instead, and Rod agreed to graciously come up and be with us a week early. So you were fortunate to hear him today. And she will be with us about domestic violence again next week. So tune in next week if you were planning on that particular program. And I want to thank Reverend Rodney Romney for his appearing on my show today. I've thoroughly enjoyed our talk. It's
so
been wonderful.
I.
And I didn't get through all the questions. And this has been a most interesting hour. Hope that you learned something and that you are interested in getting hold of his book, Wilderness Spirituality. I know you will thoroughly enjoy it. And if you need to contact me at 253-845-4907, please call. I'll be willing and glad to hear from you. Or you can email me directly at marilyn@angelicusgifts.com. We'll have Dr. Cherie Moore next week. And I want to thank Rod again for appearing. We've enjoyed every minute of it. And maybe we can have you back again sometime.
Thank you.
Thank you again, and have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you next Wednesday at noon on KLAY. Be sure to tune in and hear about domestic violence. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Maryland Solutions. Listen again next week for another informative show with guests from coast to coast. For a copy of today's program or a copy of her new book, Roses Have Thorns, and videotapes on empowerment and spiritual tools for healing domestic violence, write to KLAY in care of Maryland Solutions, 10025 Lakewood Drive Southwest, Tacoma, Washington, 98499. Or visit her website at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com.
Many people are looking for a new direction and a lift in spirit. Hello, I'm Reverend Marilyn, a counselor, teacher for over 30 years, and a spiritual advisor for addictions, codependency, domestic violence, past lives, and holistic healing. Join me every Wednesday at noon for Maryland Solutions, a program sure to be of interest to everyone. We will talk with guests from coast to coast, offering a wide range of talents and information. That's Maryland Solutions, Wednesdays at noon on your news and information station, KLAY 1180.